The following message is copyrighted by Westminster Theological Seminary. Duplication, distribution, or other use of all or any part of this message is not permitted without prior written consent. Please direct your inquiries to communications@wts.edu. For all other information, please visit the main website at www.wts.edu.
Now, what we were looking at then is Carl Jaspers. We were looking at the position of Carl Jaspers, and we said that still another influence on him was that of Kierkegaard. And we mentioned of the existential thinkers is the one most closely related to Kierkegaard, even though he did object to him. If we look at the idea of transcendence in Kierkegaard, we find that it's really quite close to that of Jaspers or vice versa. And he also had a view of decision like that of Kierkegaard and emphasized decision. He did, however, reject the idea of the incarnation, and he also rejected the idea of paradox, as Kierkegaard presented it. Now, we did mention just at the very end of the last hour that Jaspers had the idea that we transcend over what is given, we transcend over the world, as it were, we swing out of it, or we are elevated above it, much as a rocket might be catapulted into space. And then, even as we find in the thought of Kierkegaard, there is a return into the finite. Jaspers called this double transcendence, a double transcendence. Kierkegaard, as you are aware, called it the double movement of infinity. Well, we're going to find out how important this is to Jaspers' thinking later on this hour. But before we do that, let's simply say a couple of things again about the influence of Kierkegaard on Jaspers, and then we shall begin a discussion of Jaspers' mature thought. Now, Jaspers said that Kierkegaard helped him see philosophy as an independent discipline, free from science. You'll remember that Jaspers had set himself up against the thought of Husserl, Edmund Husserl, who had attempted to overcome the problem of psychologism, who had attempted to overcome the problem of historicism by considering science, by trying to develop science as, develop philosophy, that is to say, as a science, as an exact science. Jaspers reacted against that. He said philosophy is not that. Philosophy is a philosophical faith. And he says then, Jaspers says, that Kierkegaard helped him to see the independence of philosophy from science, and it is through Kierkegaard that he obtained insight into the giants, we might say, of philosophy, the great figures in the history of philosophy. Now, when Jaspers wrote his Psychology of Worldviews, his Psychologie der Weltanschauungen, or Psychology of Worldviews, that was in 1919, Kierkegaard and Nietzsche had emerged as the thinkers who had shocked our time into awareness. We've mentioned these two before. Jasper said, here there are these two 19th century thinkers who really didn't fit in the 19th century, who were mavericks, as it were, in the 19th century, and they then anticipated what was going to come, and they emerged then as the thinkers who had shocked even our time into awareness. Now, as a professor of philosophy in Heidelberg, Jaspers launched into a study of the great philosophers. For him, Kant became the philosopher par excellence, Immanuel Kant, the thought of Kant. Jaspers' thinking has been called a Kantianism in the contemporary situation. If you read him, you'll see many things that remind you of the thinking of Immanuel Kant. Nevertheless, Jaspers tried to bring things into the present and to bring things into the 20th century. And his thinking has been called a Kantianism in the contemporary situation. Like Kant, Jaspers was a critical thinker. That is, he was critical of any, we noticed already, he was critical of any positions that might fall into dogmatism. He was a critical thinker. Like Kant, too, he set great stock on the self and its freedom, a criticism, as we find it also in Kant, was a reflection on the self. And Jaspers then put great stock on the self and its freedom. But, as we shall see, he tried to go beyond Kant in important respects. Now, Jaspers had a different attitude, however, toward Hegel. Like Kierkegaard, he objected to the idea of a total system. Hegel had attempted to wrap everything up, to see everything as then the history of the concept, and Jaspers disagreed with that. Now, we've got to be very careful when we say this kind of thing, because one can talk about being anti-systematic, yet on the other hand, the only way that you can criticize a system is from some kind of a systematic point of view. If you're going to criticize it philosophically, you have to criticize it from a systematic point of view. So we have to inquire as to the structure of Jaspers' thinking, of course. But nevertheless, he did object to the idea of a total system. Yet he employed a dialectical method that has Hegelian overtones. And so there are Hegelian overtones in his thought, even though he was against Hegel's idea of a complete system. For one thing, Jaspers, as we shall see, held that there was an all-embracing reason. Vernunft embraces everything. So there's an all-embracing reason. Within reason, there's a dialectical movement. Hegel thought that there was a dialectical movement within reason. But according to Jaspers, this is not supposed to be a movement of the concept of what the Germans called Begriff. It's not supposed to be a movement of the concept, in other words, a movement within the concepts simply themselves, which for Jaspers would have meant that things are closed off, that things then would become rounded off, as Hegel thought of it. But instead of being closed off, this movement issues in what I talked about last time, namely shipwreck. It issues in a shipwreck. It issues in what you might call failure. The ship of reason, you might say, founders and falls apart. And as we mentioned last time, for Jaspers, Max Weber, capital M-A-X, capital W-E-B-E-R, and his work was a symbol of this foundering. Here is Weber with his work not rounded off, with his work then incomplete, with his work, as it were, in bits and pieces. Is there meaning in that, Jaspers said, and his answer was yes. So for Jaspers, Weber was a symbol of this foundering, of this shipwrecking. He thought that this foundering, that this shipwrecking, that this failure, this breaking apart, was that which opened the way to philosophy. If you're really going to philosophize now, you're not going to look at for a closed system. But when things fall apart on you, when your boat founders and it shipwrecks, then the issue is what you do with that. Foundering then, or scheitern in the German, opens the way to philosophy. It opens the way to true selfhood and to the transcendent. And so I quoted the German last time, Im Scheitern das Sein zu erfahren, to experience being then in the midst of failure or this shipwrecking or this foundering. Now we're going to turn then to Jaspers' mature philosophical position, and we're going to then see how he incorporates ideas like this. And we want also to note how he relates to the Christian faith. And so if we have looked then at Jaspers' early years, his working in psychotherapy and his working with worldviews, psychology of worldviews, the certain influences that came to bear on him and so forth, then let's look then at the fundamental or the basic structure of Jaspers' mature thought. The basic structure then of Jaspers' mature thought. And this comes to expression, I shall refer first of all to his work, Philosophy, of which there are three volumes in the English translation. In the German edition I had, there was only one, 900 and some pages of very, very difficult German. But then you have the work that was not translated, which has not been translated, namely Of Truth, von der Wahrheit. Of Truth, and that was the first volume, but there was no other volume ever printed, and so I suppose one doesn't have really to think of it as the first volume. It's the only one extant, the only one that was ever finished. I guess I told you how I was going to be studying Carl Jaspers for my dissertation, and I went to my professor and told him I wanted to deal with Jaspers' idea of transcendence, and he said, that's fine, do you have any of Jaspers' works? And I was foolish enough to tell him I had his work, Von der Wahrheit, and he said, he snapped back at me, read it, and it was 1,100 pages of German, and it took me, as I may have told you, 20 days reading 8 hours a day in order to finish that book. And it was really what one might call a tour de force. Well, to get away from the stories, back to the material at hand, we'll be looking at the kind of thing that Jaspers was doing in philosophy and Von der Wahrheit or Of Truth. And let's look, first of all, at what he talks of as the encompassings. The encompassings. The umgreifende in the German, the encompassings. In my thesis, I translated that all enclosings, but the term encompassings is the accepted term. Now, in his philosophy, in this book, Philosophy, Jaspers deals first of all, as his first heading, with orientation in the world. Orientation in the world. This is attained in knowledge. That is, if we're going to orient ourselves in the world, he says, then this is obtained in knowledge. It's the natural attitude of the mind, he said, to consider the world and oneself in the world on the order of the objects that it discovers in the world. We have seen that this is a typical existentialist theme, the theme of existential thinking. Here Jaspers again, you're going to orient yourself in the world. It's the natural attitude of the mind to consider yourself on the order of the objects that one discovers in the world. Now, that natural bent, he said, leads one to seek to know the world and himself completely. One seeks to know his world, one seeks to know himself completely. And within this, namely, in world orientation or orienting oneself in the world, Jaspers distinguished two basic positions, two basic all-embracing world orientations. The first one, then, is positivism. Positivism. And the second one, then, is idealism. That as one is orienting himself in the world, there are two all-embracing world orientations, and that is positivism and idealism. In both cases, it is thought that one can gain an all-embracing view of the world that is capable of being defended by way of compelling evidence. That is, if you look at the facts, positivistic, you think you can get a total view positivistically, and that you can support such a view by compelling evidence. And this worldview, it is thought, is supposed to be valid for all. It is supposed to hold for everybody. Now, the first option, positivism, he said, builds on the empirical sciences. It builds on the foundation of the empirical sciences, the basis of the so-called facts. The second option, idealism, then construes reality according to the idea. We'll see a little bit better later on what he means by idea. But idea relates to spirit. As one then thinks in terms of idealism, he will think of the world in terms of the human spirit, or on the model of the human spirit. He will think of it after the order, on the order of the idea. Now, in his first volume of his Philosophical Logic, that is of truth here, Von der Wahrheit, Jaspers points out again in detail that the key to things cannot be found in knowledge. We said that already last time, that Jaspers is going to try to avoid absolutizing any perspective, we might say. He is going to, he takes a position also in his book of truth, that the key to things cannot be found in knowledge. But here, in this work, for the first time, he presents a theory in detail according to which the mode of being, of knowing, is only one of three immanent modes. He says this type of thing in his philosophy, but it's in the Of Truth, or it's philosophical logic, or the first volume of his philosophical logic, which he had contemplated. There, this mode of knowing, or this way of knowing, then becomes one of three immanent modes which are characteristic of man's being. Now this awareness, namely, that there are three of these, or that no one of these is the final perspective, does not proceed itself from knowledge. He says it is not understood by way of knowledge, but by way of a preliminary transcending, which elucidates or illuminates these immanent modes of the all-enclosing that we ourselves are. If you look at this, there are going to be three modes. These are three modes, he says, of what we ourselves are, and we do not then understand about these three modes by way of a knowledge, but by way of a preliminary transcending in which there's an elucidation or illumination of these immanent modes that we ourselves are. He says that such an all-enclosing, such an encompassing of which we are speaking, cannot become an object of thought. It can only be elucidated then philosophically by way of an act of transcending. And so here, already, there is supposed to be a transcending of the world, of a moving out away from the world, of a swinging out, you might say, away from the world. And he says this transcendence, this transcending, is the method of philosophy. Well, now, Jaspers then distinguished these modes, or these manners of being, of the all-enclosing or the encompassing that we are. The first one then is what he calls Dasein. We've run into this word before. We ran into it when we dealt with Martin Heidegger. But we're going to find that Jaspers interprets Dasein differently from Heidegger. He has a different view of Dasein. His view of Dasein is rather close to Kierkegaard's description of the aesthetic attitude, the aesthetic manner of existence. Because for Jaspers, Dasein is immediateness. For example, the immediateness of vitality. You get up in the morning. Some people seem to think they have to have their coffee to wake up. I always find that rather strange. But you eat your, what do you eat? Your Wheaties or your, we are pretty, we've been eating shredded wheat for many, many years. For one thing, my son Stephen was on a health kick some years back, and he was telling us that just about everything else was not good for us. Well, we eat some shredded wheat and so on, and you begin to then get full of energy and so forth, and you want to do this and you want to do that and the other. There's the immediateness of vitality. The second thing is consciousness in general, or what in the German is called Bewusstsein überhaupt. Consciousness in general, that is thought. That's what we were talking about a moment ago. Thought with the claim to general validity. If you do your thinking and you have to make a claim to general validity, that he calls that was in the horizon of consciousness in general. And then the third one is Geist or spirit. That is the realm of the idea, as I mentioned. You might as well use the German expression Geist, capital G-E-I-S-T, because that means spirit in German, but it has the particular thought then of the human spirit, which is the sphere, as Jaspers understands it, of the idea. Now let's talk about these things then just a little bit more in detail. Dasein. Remember that for Jaspers, Dasein does not mean the same as it does in the philosophy of Heidegger. For Jaspers, Dasein is that which is just what it is. If you can think back to Jean-Paul Sartre, within Jaspers' context, this would relate to Sartre was thinking of being en soi, that it is simply what it is. Ist nun einmal so sein in the German, or being just as it happens to be, just as it is. So it's just there. There is a facticity. There's facticity outside of man, which is simply there, da in the German, just simply there. But within man, there is a simple givenness of one's states of consciousness, emotions, and so on, impulses. There's the immediate vitality. There is what we have called in this country doing what comes naturally. There was a song about that years ago, perhaps you've heard it, but doing what comes naturally. This then is of the order of Dasein. Now Jaspers, remember, is saying that Dasein then is an encompassing, it is one of three encompassings that we are. And so it's much more than simply a description, let's say, of our states of affairs within ourselves. It is a basic origin. It is a fundamental origin. It is what I already mentioned in this course, what you could call a virgin spring, out then of which we live. And so Jaspers maintained, if it's a virgin spring or a fundamental origin, a basic origin, there are some inalienable rights associated with Dasein. Now, we don't want to bring too much romance into Westminster Theological Seminary because, after all, we're supposed to be very sedate around here and so forth. But I got a reputation here at the seminary for bringing romance into Westminster Seminary years ago because I taught about Kierkegaard, and I taught about Kierkegaard's girlfriend, Regina Olsen, and the men who had come for the THM examinations would know all about Regina Olsen if they didn't know anything else. And so I then had the reputation of bringing romance into Westminster Seminary. Well, anyway, we might find some parallel here. Because if this is an encompassing and all-enclosing, then there are certain rights connected with it. For example, Jaspers maintained the inalienable right of romance in the choice of a marriage partner. He mentioned that erotic attachment could not rightfully be rejected from outside, because Dasein is, we might say, out of its own ground. It then has its ground within itself. Now, we can begin to get the flavor of this then, because there's this Dasein, there's just happening to be that one happens to fall in love. For example, was it in this course that I asked if we ask our marriage partner, why is it then that you fell in love? I think if we're honest with ourselves, we can't really tell. There is something, after all, there that is mysterious, rather unexplainable, but Jaspers roots this then in an all-enclosing, in an encompassing that is Dasein, and there is then a certain legitimation that comes with it, and one cannot then challenge it from outside. I should think that we would certainly want to say to our children, to our friends, that they ought then to live according to the scriptures in these matters. They ought to apply biblical principles, and that would mean they would have then to acknowledge a criterion that simply did not flow then from their inclinations. But you see what Jaspers is doing here. Now, as far as consciousness in general is concerned, or Bewusstsein überhaupt, he says this is the level of knowing. Here there is a transcending of immediate vitality. Indeed, there is a transcending, he says, of immediate vitality, and this then is subjected to the claim of generally valid truth. Now, indeed, consciousness in general, he says, is supported by man's vitality. If you don't have any energy at all, it's hard to think, right? It might also then be harnessed to the finite ends of Dasein, because Dasein is not only then immediate vitality, but also the finite ends that we have within the world. In a pragmatic situation where we have to ask what is useful, for example, that is belongs to the area of Dasein. But nevertheless, he says, that's not the whole bag here, because he says there is an irreducible sense of truth. If we think of truth, we think of this side of truth, where there is the claim to universal validity. The claim to universal validity is not, again, simply something that we just happen to see, but he then regards it as an encompassing. It is an irreducible origin out of which we live. Well, in the third place, you have Geist, or spirit, which is down the realm of the idea, as I said. This is the realm, Jasper says, of, shall I say, spiritual totalities, of totalities that are within the sphere of spirit. These, then, are, what shall we say, entities. These, then, are ideas within which one lives and moves. That is, there's something about the idea that it not only attracts one, but also impels one, so that one, as it were, is taken up in it. He lives and moves within the sphere of spirit. With its ideas. So such a totality, Jasper said, is not simply an object. It's not something simply outside of one. It is that which at the same time forms and carries one. An idea forms and carries one. So we're, as it were, pulled along with it and pushed along by it. Now, for this reason, Jaspers discovered here an incipient transcendence of the subject-object distinction. Let's try to get a handle on that. We're familiar with the subject-object distinction. The idea of the subject here standing, in the humanistic view, standing up over against the world. Subject, object. You can think of the objects out there, the subject then, which then is apprehending the objects, which is related to the objects in some fashion. Jaspers says, in spirit, there is an incipient transcending of the subject-object distinction. Because I am, as a subject, and according to the way he thinks, not simply over against the object, but I am, as it were, taken up in something. And the object is none that, then not just simply outside of me, but then the object also functions in a way within the spiritual totality. And so, Jaspers said, here in spirit, in the realm of the idea, there is an approximation of true selfhood, what he will call existence, or true selfhood. It's not going to be found here. There's an approximation of it. Because if we're going then to experience ourselves, if we're going then to realize ourselves, there has to be an overcoming of the subject-object relationship. There has to be a total reflection on ourselves, and Jaspers says that is not carried out fully in spirit, in Geist, but it is carried out part way, and therefore there's an approximation of true selfhood. Now, for Jaspers, however, after the completion of his psychology of worldviews, the Psychologie der Weltanschauungen, there was an early work of Jaspers. The idea for him took a different place. In this work, in this earlier work, the idea was supreme. He desired to distance himself from any idealism that thought that the ultimate is of the nature of the idea. And in the psychology of worldviews, the idea had a very central place. But as Jaspers went on, he wanted then to distance himself from an idealism which would think that the ultimate was of the nature of idea. Jaspers came to say that idealism is the position that claims that everything is embraced in the idea. That everything is embraced in the idea. But, as I mentioned, he said later on that the idea is then simply one of several encompassings. Now, so we cannot find then the center in, as he came to understand it, in the idea. We cannot find it then in consciousness in general. We cannot find it then in Dasein, in immediate vitality, or in the finite purposes and ends that we have in the world. Getting back to the idea, it's impossible to find a total view there. Because as we try to interpret everything in terms of the idea, we find that there is always something that escapes us. The idea is always faced with the other. The self, here, understood this way, is always faced with the other, which will not allow itself to be conformed to the idea. Now, even Hegel, had some insight, Jaspers says, into this, that you cannot just embrace everything in the idea, because Hegel developed the idea of the impotence or the impotency of nature. There is something then that escapes. But Jaspers says Hegel did not carry through this idea consistently, but he then allowed for a triumph of meaning. In other words, Jaspers tries to take hold of something that is in Hegel's thought, where Hegel himself is aware that there's something that escapes the totality as he understood it. But he did not bring that into his thinking centrally enough, Jaspers says. He allowed for a triumph of meaning. This extra, this then, what is left over, this then, that which remains, Jaspers said, shows the impossibility of obtaining a totality view. And this comes, he says, particularly into the picture in what he called the boundary situations. The boundary situations, or you can say the limiting situations. The German is Grenzsituationen, the Grenzsituationen. It comes into view, this fact that we cannot wrap everything up, comes into view especially in what Jaspers called the boundary or limiting situations. Then let's look at these things for a while, and we're going to see a little bit more clearly what he means. Let's look at the limiting situation, or the boundary situation, the Grenzsituationen. Now, the limiting situation has an important place in Jaspers' philosophy. It had it even early in this Psychology of Worldviews that he wrote, but it also has a very important place in his mature works, in his philosophy, and also in the philosophical logic of truth. Now, according to Jaspers, the limiting situation, and we did in a preliminary definition of existential thinking, we said then it is a reflection on the self in situation, right? And now we're going to look more carefully at Jaspers' idea of these situations. According to Jaspers, a limiting situation or a boundary situation is not a finite situation in which we can either be or not be. A situation in regard to which, in some measure, we can determine our own relationship to it. When I was talking about angst and fear earlier in the course, I told you about the encounter with the mountain lion. Well, that was pretty scary, lying there on my stomach with a 3-cell flashlight and shining the light in the lion's eyes, and we're just staring each other down, or one another down. I had a companion. And, but as I mentioned, even though the lion might have pounced on us and really rather torn us to shreds, you can do something with the lion. You can shoot it. As a matter of fact, the lion did start to circle and we got out of there. Any situation in which you are, in which something can be done to get you out of it, is really not a limiting situation. A limiting situation, or a boundary situation, according to Jaspers, is a situation that is unavoidable. It's a situation that cannot be circumvented. And It is therefore a situation which answers to that image that we talked about a while back in the course, namely, here is a projectile going with infinite speed and hitting a wall that is infinitely impenetrable, and what happens? It smashes then into infinitesimally small pieces. That at least is the image that this brings to bear. It is therefore a situation against which our possibilities shatter. As this is the way Jaspers thinks of it. It's a situation against which our possibilities shatter as against a wall, but they shatter of necessity. There's no escaping it. And, as we see here, since you can't escape this, then what you are bound to do, or what you're getting into here, is that you need a hermeneutic of your inability to escape it. The idea of hermeneutic comes in here. It comes in Hegel, it comes in Jaspers, it comes in generally in existential thinking as one then is faced with the ineluctability of the situation. Well, Jaspers speaks then of a limiting situation in general, and then of several limiting situations in particular. Well, what then would be the limiting situation in general? A limiting situation in general, then, is that we are always in situation. We can move in and out of particular situations, but we cannot avoid being in situation. What is existential thinking? Reflection on the self in situation, the situation in which alone it is a self. You cannot avoid being in situation. You cannot get out of being in situation. That is the situation in general. Now, that man is always in situation, Jaspers says, is a problem to him because he is not simply bound to a habitat like an animal. An animal is bound to a habitat. But we're not bound to a habitat. To use that distinction, we have an environment, but we are not bound to a habitat. Man, Jaspers says, looks toward totality. But even while he surveys his possibilities, he finds that he is unable then to escape his being in situation. Now, I may have drawn some of these things on the board in the class before, but let me do it again. There's one manner of looking at this. If one draws then a half circle, starting here to the left and going up and down, again drawing a half circle, if one thinks then of this, putting an infinity sign next to it, as the horizon that's constantly opening before us of our possibilities, one can indeed think of contemplating his possibilities, but at the same time, one has to put a dot then right here down at the center, at the bottom of this half circle, as it were. Here at the one side you have your infinity, you're always straining out, transcending, and yet at the same time you are bound to this situation. Another diagram one can use, as we shall have been using it, is that you draw a line, horizontal on the board, and then you draw about four vertical, small vertical lines under it, and you start at the far left here, and you draw a line upward past the horizontal line, and then you let that curl back again until you are pointing at the point from which you started. You can put your infinity sign then again at the top of that curve, trajectory, as we might call it, going out of the world. So you can indeed transcend. You can transcend past this line here, which might represent then some norm, let's say, this horizontal line. And you can contemplate your infinite possibilities. You can be faced with your infinite possibilities, and yet you are at the same time bound to the situation. This is the pattern that I've been referring to, the double movement of transcendence. This is the pattern of the double movement of infinity in Kierkegaard. Jaspers uses it here, and so we have all the time the tension between the possibilities, the open horizon of possibilities, and the closeness of the situation. One is reminded in surveying his possibilities that he cannot disengage from the concrete historical situation. This, for Jaspers, means, to use that word again that we have become familiar with, that man is historic. That man is historic, that his existence is geschichtlich, or historic. It's possible to contemplate an ideal standpoint, but, and here is a thought that is not at all foreign to German idealism as well as existential thinking, if we are to be anything at all, we must engage reality in the situation. If we're going to be anything at all, we have to be something. We have to engage reality in the situation in order truly to be. Now, besides these limiting situations, then, in general, there are special limiting situations, special boundary situations, and I shall mention them. And then after our break, we'll look at them one by one. The first one is death. The second one is suffering. The first one is death. The second one is suffering. The third one is conflict. And the fourth one is guilt. Death, suffering, conflict, guilt. And so the idea is, as we shall see next hour, that we are always in a situation, according to Jaspers, where we are faced with death. We are always in a situation where it is ineluctably so that we shall then be in a situation of suffering. There is inevitable conflict, and also inevitable guilt. But we'll take five and return then and discuss these in detail.